And that'll open the program, music by Randy Raymond, Icarus. And then closing the program, let's just say briefly about this. You've already told me before we even started talking for On Air that this is a remarkably challenging piece in a lot of different ways. It's a suite from a stage work called The Miraculous Mandarin by Béla Bartók, and it's got a really creepy story.
It does. And in fact, I found out doing my research that the person who wrote the story, another Hungarian by named Manihert Lengyel, he published this scenario in a Hungarian literary journal with the hopes of attracting a ballet that would be composed by Dohnányi and would be staged by Diaghilev. This is all in the period in the decade that included World War I, the period of Rite of Spring and this period of great turmoil and fervor in the arts when modernism was crashing through the scenes, and there were many stage works inspired by exotic subjects that often include what's sometimes called primitivism or violence or otherwise strains of human behavior that undercut the veneer of civility, and that of course was very much in the air as World War I with great violence smashed the veneer of civility of 19th century culture, and so it turned out that Dohnányi and Diaghilev were not interested in this story, but Bartók saw it and said, "I am really interested in this."
So, what was the story?
It's set in a gritty urban landscape. In that sense, it can be said to be one of these examples of early 20th century realism, you know, like Berg's Vucek or Maxim Gorky's The Lower Depths, or you know, a kind of Brechtian milieu of poverty and a kind of a Sweeney Todd dog eat dog world. This was part of the problem with getting the work staged, is there's implicit social criticism as well as the violence of the story. In any case, from a very raucous opening, which suggests a busy city street, there are brass figures that really sound like car horns in a kind of a traffic jam. We are introduced to three low-life thugs who have no money and are starving and hit upon a scheme. They force a girl to stand in their window to lure in men from the street, and once in, they will be beaten and robbed. And then the ballet really gets going as we go through the cycle of the three seductions. The first, and the girl goes to the window three times. Each time, there is what's called a decoy game or a seduction dance, and these always feature the clarinets in the score. The first one features one clarinet and is fairly extended. The second one features two clarinets, is higher in pitch, and is even more extended and elaborate. And the third one, all three clarinets, higher yet in pitch, and the most elaborate and extensive of all. The first seduction game lures in an old rake, a dissipated old man who imagines himself a great lover. And in a little bit of tone painting with Collegno and some other things, we hear him creaking around and trying to make exaggerated gestures of love to the girl, and they find out quickly he has no money, and they throw him out to the street, and we hear the car horns again briefly. The second seduction brings in a shy young man who the girl tries to engage in a waltz, and at first he's very awkward and shy and embarrassed, but then he suddenly becomes very passionate and strangely seems to grow up very quickly. This is all, of course, reflected in the music. I've never seen this, although, of course, having studied this music in such depth, I can envision it very vividly. And then he has no money and is thrown out into the street. The third dance brings the Mandarin, and the minute the Mandarin is seen through the window, we sense something very different about this person. He probably has money. He is very well dressed, but he cannot be interpreted. He is impassive. He is threatening in some way. He simply embodies the other, or perhaps the psychic double, or the part of you that you fear. I mean, there are any number of ways to interpret what the Mandarin may symbolize. He is made to be a Mandarin, that is to say, an Asian or Chinese, simply not because it's specifically anything about China or Asia, but just because he's different. He's other. He's exotic, and they can't read him. They don't know what's going on. And he bolts up the stairs, and at the moment he reaches the top of the stairs, there's a crashing climax in the music that settles on a long, sustained minor third in the brass, which we understand to be his gaze. He stares, fixated, unblinking at the girl. He is completely impassive, but he is completely locked on her. And she's terrified, and the thugs are hiding, and we have no idea what he's thinking or what he's going to do. So the girl is terrified, but she slowly, tentatively begins to dance for him some more. And this goes on for quite a while. The Mandarin just stares. He's a presence you can't ignore, but he doesn't do a thing. He doesn't even blink. And then finally he bolts and chases her. He goes from complete passivity to uncontrolled passion. In this sense, he may represent the destruction of the normal man, the basis of civilized society as destroyed by the World War, the person who is not capable of rational balance between either complete passivity and uncontrolled passion. So at this point, the passion breaks through the passivity. He chases the girl, finally catches her, and at this point, the thugs leave their hiding place and capture him. And it's at this point that the suite ends, the music that we're playing. It ends with a very exciting passage, just, you know, the chase music. A little like Bartok's Allegro Barbaro or that kind of wild, exciting music. So it's a great concert ender, but that's not the end of the story.